you're in the 06010. Focus. Fantasy. Fantasy Focus. The Fantasy Focus Football Podcast is presented by Geico. Whether you rent or own, Geico makes it easy to bundle home and car insurance. Go to geico.com today. And we're back for more. That's right. Two podcasts in 2 days with potentially one more coming later this week. It's Field Yates, Matthew Berry, and Stefania Bell. Stefania, how are you today?
I'm good, thanks. How are you? 2 days in a row, I get to see your smiling face. Makes me happy.
And how do you feel about seeing Matthew's face for the second straight day? You can be honest.
Matthew didn't hear you.
How do you feel?
I heard you. I'm waiting.
I was saying, Stefania, how do you feel about seeing Matthew's face?
Oh, I thought you. Oh, okay. Well, I'm still
a question.
You know why I can't concentrate? Because I'm so busy still laughing at how Field just owned you on Twitter.
Yeah. In fairness, you let me. I mean, Matthew, you could not have made it any easier for me.
Oh yeah. Listen. Well, that was the idea. That was the idea. So here's what's interesting. So prior to the show, if I can let everyone in behind the scenes a little bit. Very upsetting. I texted you guys saying, hey, listen, I'm running 5 minutes behind.
That's my like wife an auto text, by the way, that you just hit automatically every time we do a show.
No. I crafted specially each time. So I wrote, I'm running 5 minutes behind. My wife kicked me out of the house because we were getting some work done and she neglected to tell me. So I have to come into the office to do the podcast. I didn't want, a lot of banging and hammers and stuff in the background. And so to which Field wrote back, I read the first two lines, my wife kicked me out of the house and was surprised. To which Stefania replied, not me. Which, Field, I have to tell you something. During this pandemic, my wife and Stefania, both having been vaccinated, have now been spending a lot of time together. And it's very upsetting to me. And by the way, Stefania might be right on this. I'm very nervous, to be honest.
I'm sorry. You're right. Yeah. And I don't mean to be unkind. I'm certainly glad your wife did not leave you. But if she did leave you, I think Stefania would be a very adequate replacement for you in so many ways. So but you set us up and then you did it again on Twitter, Matthew. So if you want to go figure out what happened on that great tweet exchange, go to Matthew Berry TMR and look for his latest post, which is a photo of him and a Star Wars character, C-3PO, on May 4th.
May the 4th be with you.
May the 4th be with you, absolutely. It's a Twitter joke come to life. My wife left me. Yeah, so there's a chance that we'll see that Stefania's going to move in and I'll be out on the street. So we'll keep you posted on that, but I'm not thrilled with the amount of time Stefania and my wife are spending together these days.
That's not very kind of you to say. Well, the reason why we are back here is because yesterday we did the first round of rookies. Now we're going to finish off the rest of the most fantasy relevant rookies that were drafted in rounds 2 through 4, 5, 6, maybe. And we're going to begin with the second pick in the second round. That was Elijah Moore, the wide receiver from Ole Miss, going to the Jets, Matthew, and all of a sudden Zach Wilson has some interesting wide receivers to work with.
I thought the Jets did an overall really good job on the draft, just in general, right? And so, I just think for the first time in a long time, I think Jets fans have legit hope, right? I mean, listen, still a long way to go, but you can tell there's a direction now to the franchise, and it's all going to depend on does Zach Wilson work out, right? They got rid of Sam Darnold. They drafted him second overall, but here's what they said. It's like, all right, we're not going to send you out there alone, right? They fortified the offensive line, which helps. And they also grabbed Elijah Moore. And look, one of the things about Zach Wilson, we talked about this on yesterday's show, Zach Wilson's a deep ball thrower. They need to give him time to complete passes. And the offensive line obviously is an issue in New York, but as long as they're going to, he's going to be under pressure, give him somebody that's really good after the catch. Give him somebody that that can play close to the line of scrimmage. And, that's Elijah Moore, right? The concern here, Field, is does Jamison Crowder play for the Jets in 2021?
Interesting what if. Jamison Crowder's due $10 million, non-guaranteed this year. He's one of those players that has been speculated upon as a potential post-draft casualty. Not necessarily for cap reasons. The Jets have plenty of cap space, but just because They may have a redundant piece now in Eli Moore and Jamison Crowder. So we'll keep an eye on that one, Matthew. And I'm not sure I'm prepared to draft any Jets wide receiver this year. Really think the value on them is going to be basically just late round flyers, if nothing else, or nothing more. But I have some hope and optimism for Zach Wilson, especially for those playing in rookie dynasty leagues, that he could eventually maybe become emerge as a legit fantasy asset quarterback, because he's got plenty of skills, as you noted. I'll go ahead, Matthew.
I was just going to say, I actually really like Elijah Moore, and I think he's a really interesting dynasty pick.
Sure.
And it wouldn't surprise me to see him have fantasy value, but I agree with you. I'm not somebody I'm going to the draft, except, you know, to take unless it's a late round flyer or somebody like in a best ball draft, that kind of thing. I will say this. I really like Denzel Mims. You know, he showed some flashes towards the end of last year. And like, if I was taking a flyer on a Jets receiver in redraft this year, give me some Denzel Mims. I just think that's a really talented kid. And I'm excited to see what he does in his second year of the NFL with hopefully some improved quarterback play.
Yeah. And
the Jets are going to be an interesting team to me because there's so many 49ers coaches who have moved over there. And with Mike LaFleur being the offensive coordinator and under Shanahan and how they use receivers out of the slot, I'm very interested in what they end up doing with Elijah Moore.
Okay. So yeah. Well, I'm with you there. We'll see how the entire offense shapes up. Certainly a little more direction and belief now with a new staff in place there. Just a couple of picks later, one pick later, the Broncos moved up in the order to grab Javonte Williams, the third running back off the board. Matthew, he comes from North Carolina, one of two North Carolina running backs to get taken. Let's start through this this Broncos backfield now. And also, what do you know and what do you like about Javonte Williams, the player?
He's hard to tackle. He's a full-grown man. Like, he's not somebody you want to try to wrap your arms around, right? He is, you know, he had an insane broken tackle rate. I believe he led all of FBS last year in that. Just a hard-charging runner. And you think about this Broncos backfield with Melvin Gordon and Royce Freeman and Mike Boone, and it's a brand-new regime in Denver, right? I mean, new general manager and, like the only guy they have sort of any loyalty to is Mike Boone, who they brought in this offseason, right? But I think Javonte Williams landed in one of the best fantasy situations he could have, because I think he's going to immediately split time with Melvin Gordon and potentially take that backfield over. Field, you're better at this stuff than I am in terms of contracts, but it wouldn't surprise me if Melvin Gordon were on another team. And I certainly don't think he's long for the Broncos. If he stays the Broncos, I think it's this year and that's pretty much it.
Yeah. So Melvin Gordon has $4.5 million due in salary this year, and it's all guaranteed. So the good news for Melvin Gordon is that in the event that the Broncos cut him, he's still collecting that full check of $4.5 million. And so from a cap standpoint, part of me thinks like, I don't know if I see him going anywhere. But then I also am reminded that this is a new regime, as Matthew mentioned. The loyalty and the allegiance there is not quite the same. And so I wouldn't be surprised if Melvin Gordon is playing somewhere else at the start of the season. But I'm also not counting on it, if you can sort of thread that needle there. So Javonte Williams maybe is a year away from having a major role, Matthew. But the fact that they traded up into the top of the second round tells you what kind of value they think he has. Maybe not for this year, but for next year when Melvin Gordon is no longer under contract with the Broncos and it would just be Javonte Williams and Mike Boone, who, as you mentioned, was signed from the Vikings this offseason.
I think the worst case scenario for Javonte Williams is that he's a flex play with touchdown per game upside, you know, I mean, meaning like that in any particular game, he's got a chance at scoring a touchdown. A flex play with upside. Like, I think that's the worst case scenario for Williams. Like, I don't think he'll either split this backfield or take it over. And he's going to take the backfield over. The question is just, does it happen this year? Or are we a year away from it, as you mentioned? But, really like the player quite a bit.
Stefania, what do you got?
Oh, and I was just going to say, it just feels like they're shifting to a different style of runner. You know, Philip Lindsay's gone. Looks like they really want someone who's going to be able to plow through people. And that was not the Philip Lindsay style of play. And I think with Melvin Gordon being an injury risk of late, this young man has a chance to really push to be the one who's on the field the majority of the time.
It could be, yeah. I'm interested by the, in the player for sure. And just good value for the Broncos. Second round running back, just a much different sort of financial template than a first round running back, as we saw with both Najee Harris and also Travis Etienne. 49th overall is Rondell Moore. Stephon, you know anything about Rondell Moore, the Arizona Cardinals new wide receiver out of Purdue? He's a fun guy.
Yeah, he is. You know, he's not a big guy. He's tiny, but he's quick. I think one of the reasons that I pay attention to him is when you have somebody who missed 11 out of 18 games over the last 2 years because of injuries, they show up on my radar. So I do think there are some concerns naturally about his ability to stay healthy. As far as a fit in Arizona, the problem is there's so many options in Arizona. Like for fantasy purposes, it's hard to have a huge, to place a huge amount of value, especially initially when you've got DeAndre Hopkins as a favorite target. You're looking for running backs to potentially catch balls from Kyler Murray. I don't know that I'm super excited about Rondell Moore for fantasy purposes.
So I mentioned this on our Twitter live stream, and Matthew, you can retort if you feel differently or feel the same. So Rondell Moore, such a fun player. If anybody here watched Big Ten football, you know all about Rondell Moore. He's 5'9", ran a 4.29 40 in the pre-draft process. He single-handedly beat Ohio State during his true freshman season. He's all over the field for Purdue, one of the most electric players in the country during his time with the Boilermakers. My concern is that the track record for Arizona in recent years in developing wide receivers hasn't been great, right? 2 years ago, they drafted three, Keem Butler, Keyshawn Johnson, and Andy Isabella. None of them materialized into anything. And as I mentioned on the draft show, even DeAndre Hopkins, amazing year last year, and it was ridiculously productive. I think people felt as though the Arizona Cardinals offense got a little bit stale down the stretch last season. So I'm optimistic because of the player, and I'm certainly hopeful. Matthew, I just, you know, if you had inserted him into, I don't know, maybe Sean McVay or Andy Reid, I'd be sitting here doing cartwheels over the prospect of what Rondell Moore could do in those respective offenses.
I think both you and Stefania are right here in the fact that you're right in the sense, exciting player, really fun. But to your point about, you know, concerns about the offense and then developing a fantasy relevant wide receiver that isn't named DeAndre Hopkins, and Stefania's concern about, listen, they got a lot of mouths to feed, you know, like a healthy Christian Kirk is going to get fed. And listen, they do a lot of four wide sets, so I get it. But, you know, my concern here is that, hey, you've got Chase Edmonds out of the backfield. And so I think this is a better move for Kyler Murray's fantasy value, which was already really high to begin with, than it is necessarily great for Rondell Moore to have standalone, consistent redraft fantasy value. So I agree with both of your assessments here.
Yeah. And by the way, for those, there's a very fair pushback on my comment about the Cardinals not developing wide receivers, that Rondell Moore is more talented than any of those guys. But there was a lot of buzz about around Andy Isabella as an example, and Hakeem Butler as an example when they drafted them just 2 years ago. Isabella, I mean, being
in fairness, Butler got hurt immediately. So that, I mean, you know, he was out for the year. So that, in fairness there, but.
And then he got cut, right? I mean, he's, you know, so they didn't end up developing here. And then same thing with, you know, obviously with Isabella, you know, it's never come around. So, you know, I understand the injuries are out of their control. At the same time, like the development never got, they didn't believe enough in him that they were going to keep him around when he was super cheap, right? He's now playing for the Eagles as a converted tight end.
Hey, but Field, is that a Cliff Kingsbury criticism, or is that a Steve Keim criticism?
Well, I don't think it's a Steve Keim criticism. I actually think Keim's pretty opportunistic as a GM. I think it's probably a coaching staff, and it's, I guess, criticism and observation are sort of like, you know, maybe there's some gray area there. It just feels like there hasn't been a ton of players offensively, skill guys wise, that you're like, okay, wow. And I understand Kyler would be the obvious answer here, but you know, Kyler's a pretty special guy himself, right? No matter where Kyler Murray was playing, I think people would feel like he'd have a chance to be, you know, pretty useful. So I'm not trying to drop the hammer too much. I'm just saying,
I get it, but I'm just
the places where he could have landed, I think there are others that may have would have been more compelling to me.
I think it's really interesting because, like, who have they want? They have made moves to bring in guys that they could just throw in and be immediately successful, like mm-hmm. DeAndre Hopkins. Even when they brought Kenyon Drake over, he'd been in the league for a while, and they plugged him into the system. I think your point about developmentally, I'm trying to think of anyone who's really been developed over in Arizona, and I'm having a hard time.
But listen, Christian Kirk has struggled with some injuries, but he was there before Kingsbury got there, but still, you know, I think he's shown some nice improvement. But, like, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong on this.
Kirk's actually gone. I mean, his receiving, you know, 43 to 68 to 48, right? Like, at 709 of his career high receiving yards. So he's been fine. I just, you know, again, my point is that I'm not trying to totally crash
that. Off the top of my head, I don't have any Christian Kirk stats in front of me, but off the top of my head, I think
12, 13, and 14 games each of those 3 years. So he's gone up in terms of time played. So, again, my point is simply that, you know, put him in San Francisco, and I'm sitting here with a much different narrative surrounding Rondale Moore. Let's move forward because, you know, we don't want to make this.
The last thing I was going to say on that was, I actually put a little bit more blame on potentially on Steve Keim. I mean, again, I think Hakeem, off the top of my head, you'll know this better than I, but off the top of my head, Keyshawn Johnson was a 7th-round pick. Hakeem Butler was a 4th-round. All right, a 6th and a 4th-rounder guy. Andy Isabella is a big miss. I'm with you. Damian Dabrowski, the Stata Pillar from the Fantasy Show on ESPN Plus, longtime Andy Isabella fan, still holds out hope. Long time. The pride.
He's not alone. There's an island. Yeah. There's a few of us on that island. Not many, but there's a few. We still got some real estate there. Let's move forward to Matthew. All right. I'm going to give this one right to you, except for I'm going to give a little bit of an intro. Pat Freiermuth, the tight end from Brooks. That's where he went to high school. It's where Chapin went to high school, as a matter of fact. So as I joked on the live stream, the second best athlete to ever come out of the Brooks schools, Pat Freiermuth, 2nd-round pick out of Penn State to the Pittsburgh Steelers. Matthew, I mean, he's a huge, massive, big-body tight end and good in the red zone here. You believe there's some potential? You love your fantasy tight ends. Thoughts here?
I certainly do. Eric Ebron's still around. And with adding Najee Harris, you have to feel like the Steelers are going to go a little bit more of a balanced offense this year, maybe not as pass heavy as they have been in recent history. And as long as Ebron's around, it's going to limit Freiermuth's fantasy value. I like the pick for Pittsburgh, and I think he's a really interesting dynasty pick for those that miss out on Kyle Pitts but are looking for a tight end. But I think in terms of redraft value, I think it's going to be tough for him to have consistent fantasy value as long as Ebron's there. Because again, like, Deontay Johnson, Juju Smith-Schuster, Chase Claypool, James Washington. They got a lot of viable pass catchers in Pittsburgh. And again, we all expect Najee Harris to have a much more significant role than any running back in Pittsburgh did last year. So, you know, again, like the player in Dynasty, not somebody I'm targeting in redraft.
This is one of those players that I'm going to watch really closely what happens in training camp, because Eric Ebron drops the ball. We've known this for years, and this has been a problem, and it's worse again. Nice set from Kyle that Ebron's drop percentage rose for a third straight season this last year. I think Pittsburgh's tired of messing around with some of these things. And they were clear what they wanted in a running back. That's why they went and got Najee Harris. I think this kid's a big physical tackle breaker. He is a good pass catcher. And I think later in the summer, when we're getting close to the season, we might be looking at him a little more closely.
And by the way, most important stat about Eric Ebron is that he cost me $70,000 of charity money for the cancer Jimmy B Foundation for Cancer Research, because I was in the Agbo Superhero League. I was playing against Simu Liu in the semifinals. Simu, of course, is the star of the upcoming Shang-Chi, and I needed just 10 points out of Eric Ebron in that Monday night game against Cincinnati. Ebron, of course, left very early with an injury. I lose to Simu Liu. Ebron had averaged 10 fantasy points in the 4 of his previous 5 games going into that game. And that loss to Simu Liu, I ended up finishing 3rd as opposed to 2nd or 1st in the Agbo Super League. And I ended up winning $110,000 for the Jimmy B Foundation, but had Eric Ebron stayed in that game and just gotten me 10 fantasy points, I would have gotten at least $180,000 for the Jimmy B Foundation for Cancer Research. So NBD, no big deal, but yes, cost $70,000 in cancer research.
Maybe you should ask him for it. See if he'll give it to you. I feel like Ebron will be pretty open to that arrangement.
Just like, you know, we all hate cancer. We're all pro Jimmy V Foundation. It just seemed like, you know, something he could do. Now, in fairness, that $70,000 did go to UNICEF, which is another great organization that Simu Liu was playing for. So, you know, not all is lost there. But I think that's the most important thing about Eric Ebron, is that, you know, he caused me to lose to a movie star.
Let's move forward to late in the second round, where Dwayne Eskridge from Western Michigan, wide receiver, goes to the Seahawks, their first pick. They do not have very much draft capital coming into the weekend, so using a second round pick on a wide receiver was particularly notable, in my opinion. He is such a fun player, Eskridge, who actually was a college cornerback for a while, eventually became a wide receiver, and was so good at that transition that he got drafted 56th overall. He is very fast, incredibly quick and agile. That's what really stands out. He is like a joystick out there. Matthew, they have two really good wide receivers already in Seattle. Does that depress the value of Dwayne Eskridge out of the gates?
Significantly. And, you know, and they also, there's debate about whether they're going to let Russ cook this year. And, you know, Pete Carroll signing Chris Carson to a big contract, bringing him back, talking about wanting to, you know, jokes aside, you know, establish the run, and they need to get back to running the ball more. So, again, I thought this was a nice pick. I think it's good for Russell Wilson, but can't imagine that. I don't think there's ever been a third wide receiver in Seattle, as long as Pete Carroll's been there, that has had, you know, standalone consistent fantasy value.
It's probably been a while,
Lockett,
right?
And Baldwin, and you know, recently Lockett and DK Metcalf. Can't see that. I mean, even Lockett last year was inconsistent in terms of his fantasy value. It was really all DK Metcalf. So I just, you know, very different player than David Moore, but feels like he's, you know, sort of replacing him in terms of three wide sets for the Seahawks. But I just don't know that he has consistent fantasy value.
Yeah, I would agree on that. Hey, Stefania, how much time have you spent this offseason thinking about the fact that DeSean Jackson now plays for the Rams?
Zero.
Yeah. It's one of those signings that kind of came and went really quickly. And now they've sort of drafted his, I don't know about clone, but relative clone. Yeah. And Tutu Atwell from Louisville, 57th overall. He was at one point during the pre-draft process, Stefania, 149 pounds, but he can absolutely fly. But does this strike you as one of those that's like at least a year away from being something significant?
At least. And I don't really know exactly how they're going to use him. I thought he was interesting selection here out of Louisville. I know he's had a lot of drops himself. Like, he seems like an unfinished product, right? Mm-hmm. But as we were talking about systems that can develop players, I think, look, he's who better to learn from than Cooper Kupp? He's obviously...
Sorry.
Who better to learn from than Matthew's little Cooper Kupp?
Thank you.
And I think that, you know, he's a developmental player. He did have a back injury that cost him some time last year. So again, getting him healthy. And because he's not a huge guy, he's relatively small. Like you said, 149 pounds. I had him listed at 155, but you know, maybe that's inflated. But I will say this, interesting side note, based on the work that I do, the Rams have one of the most integrated rehab and strength and conditioning performance staffs. Like, they are one of the best in the league. And that is why, if you remember when Cooper Kupp tore his ACL, he came back and was pretty phenomenal out of the gate. And a lot of it had to do with the way they approached his recovery and the way that he absorbed it all and undertook it. But I think for a player like this, this is a very good landing spot. And this is why where they land matters. Because not only from a players he can play alongside and coaches he can be developed under, he's also got a staff that's going to help build him into an NFL player from a smaller college player.
Yeah, here's the thing. Go ahead, Matthew. Okay.
I was just going to say is like with the Rams, in terms of their offense, in terms of what McVay wants to do, right, they need a deep threat. They need someone to stretch the field. Like, and that's what they had with Brandon Cooks for a while. And without Brandon Cooks, you know, that somewhat struggled. And so that's one of the reasons why they signed DeSean Jackson. It's one of the reasons why they go out and draft a guy like Atwell, who – is, to your point, DeSean Jackson insurance. You know, obviously Jackson's had trouble staying healthy over the course of his career. And just having a guy that can fly down the sideline and take a safety with him just opens stuff up for the way that they run their offense. And it's a big part of what he does. And in terms of, and you know, when you've got somebody like Matthew Stafford, who's got a big arm, who likes to sling it, who isn't scared to throw deep, but also can open stuff up underneath for Cooper Kupp or for Robert Woods, who's such a great route runner, even help out with play action in terms of the run game, which is a big part of how the Rams run the ball. I think this is a really good pick for the Rams offense. I think it's a really good pick for Matthew Stafford. I think he has absolutely no standalone value this year. And, you know, there are other players that I'm more excited about dynasty wise, just because I think he's going to be, you know, I think in best case scenario, he's going to be one of those guys that's like more of a, you know, best ball type player that's going to have, you know, big plays, a handful of games, but, you know, he's going to get three receptions a game and you're hoping one of them goes for a long touchdown.
Yeah, I think this is it. By the way, another one of those, I keep saying it, but like, talk to me again in 2022. I just think with DeSean Jackson plus the two established wide receivers, they took a fourth round wide receiver, Cam Akers. I think Tutu Atwell is much more interesting in 2022 and beyond. Matthew, I'm going to go back to you here. Terrace Marshall Jr. lasted a while longer than some expected. He's at LSU. Some injury concerns pushed him down the board. He was a third wide receiver for LSU back in 2019 when he had 14 touchdown catches. Talk about how bad, ridiculously good that offense was. Excuse me. Now we land with a familiar face, a reunion here with Joe Brady.
Yeah, I have to tell you, like, there's a lot of wide receivers that went ahead of him that I'm less excited about fantasy-wise than Terrace Marshall. I thought this was a great landing spot for him. To your point, reuniting with Joe Brady, you know, who obviously he knows from his days in LSU where they played together. And there's an opening there. I mean, sad for my little David Moore. I've always really liked David Moore, and I thought, you know, David Moore had a chance now in Carolina. Feels like sooner rather than later, Marshall will be in three wide sets with DJ Moore and Robbie Anderson. And think about what the Panthers did last year with Joe Brady, right? And I think part of it was because they had Teddy Bridgewater in the center, but it was short passes, get their guys in space, let them run after the catch. I believe off the top of my head, the Panthers either led the NFL or one of the top teams in terms of yards after the catch last year. And so Marshall, who has that ability, right? This is a guy that, you know, has lots of speed and can catch the ball near the line of scrimmage and do things with it. I thought this is a great fit for him. For the Panthers, I think he becomes really interesting. Hard to know how the targets will be distributed with DJ Moore, Robbie Anderson. Obviously, Christian McCaffrey back healthy is going to command a large part of the passing game here, but it should be a pretty good offense. And holy weapons field. You know, Sam Darnold is just like, wait, I have guys that can catch? Wait, what? Like,
it is a decidedly different game plan. Yeah.
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say it's a much different game plan for Sam Darnold relative to what the Jets did for all those years, obviously. Definitely some really, really good weapons here. I don't know how much you know, Stefania, about the medical side with Terrace Marshall, if anything at all.
I was already looking ahead to the medical side for my next guy. But
okay, we can get to that then. Yeah, the medical was part of the concern. There's a foot injury that lingered with Terrace Marshall. So one of those where you don't know a ton about it, but we know the sort of lingering there was. So something to keep an eye on, maybe for the longevity of Terrace Marshall Jr. Yeah, I will say
this. Like, a lot of it's not uncommon for some of these foot injuries to be problematic in college because they don't get identified and they don't get fixed. Mm. And one of the things that guys are trying to play through things because there's so little playing time in college. And when they come out, I wouldn't be surprised if you hear that he ends up getting something done. The Panthers certainly have a direct line to Dr. Bob Anderson, who's the number one foot and ankle guy dealing with the NFL. So, you know, things like that happen in the background. It's probably why they were comfortable taking him.
Yeah, no doubt about that. Let's move forward here to the player that Stefania was foreshadowing about, I should say. It's Trey Sermon, the third round pick for the 49ers out of Ohio State, Stefania. And so we can get right into the fit and also the medical side and the fact that the 49ers now have the most crowded backfield in the NFL.
Yeah, and I understand why people, you know, for fantasy purposes, you're cringing. I saw Matthew post something about Raheem Mostert's value going down. But if I try to step into Kyle Shanahan's shoes, something I've been trying to do a lot over the last month, as you've been, we've been watching what the 49ers plan on doing. When you get burned the way the 49ers got burned last season because of lack of depth due to injuries, you don't want that to repeat itself. And if you go back to when they brought Tevin Coleman over and
Wayne Goldwell last year, I mean.
Yeah, and who am I thinking of that tore his knee up that I can't think of?
Jerick McKinnon, yeah.
Jerick McKinnon, yeah. So when you invest all that money and then all of a sudden you don't have running backs available, I mean, I was in San Francisco at camp once and then talking to Shanahan again at the combine last year. He's like, he basically said, we'd rather have a crowded room and deal with that then end up with depth issues. And yet last year, somehow it was problematic yet again. So they select a player in Trey Sermon, who's obviously a good fit, similar zone blocking scheme at Ohio State. He's the kind of runner that they like in San Francisco. He does have some injury history. So from that standpoint, it's interesting since injury has been such a concern. He had a spinal issue in high school. He had a LCL tear in 2019, dislocated his shoulder last year, which has since recovered from. But again, running backs are always going to have more injuries because that's the position they play. I do think that he is a great fit for them. I do understand why they took him. I do think he's going to see action straight away. And yes, it'll be potentially crowded, but they don't care. They don't care about our fantasy teams.
Well, Matthew, we do care about our fantasy teams. And tell me about how this backfield shakes out now that there are literally 19 running backs on the roster.
Yeah, obviously, it's always tough to figure out what any crowded backfield will shake out, especially one coached by a Shanahan. Having said that, I think there's some real interesting fantasy value here. I think everyone's going to ignore this backfield because there's so many guys there. And I think there's potentially some real value here. Look, I love Raheem Mostert. I think he's a really talented running back here. And I think Trey Sermon, if he can get some run, actually has a chance at real fantasy success. I'm not really worried about Jeff Wilson Jr. or anyone else. I feel like the 49ers run enough and are going to be a successful enough offense to support two fantasy relevant running backs. And I think that's going to be Mostert and Sermon.
And you say you're not concerned about Jeff Wilson though?
No, I mean, like, listen, even last year when they would have three-headed guys, like, felt like with Wilson, like they wouldn't play him until they had to. Just feels like they wouldn't play him until they had to.
But he played really well down the stretch, and they rewarded him with a pretty nice contract at the end of it too.
They did, and then they draft Trey Sermon, and they also Mostert has a nice deal as well. Like, I guess we'll wait to see how it plays out, but given how banged up Mostert has gotten over the course of his career, and to Stefania's point, like, I don't think it's going to cost you a lot to invest in 49ers running backs. And I think the upside is worth it. Again, sort of depends on roster size and how else your team is. But I think Trey Sermon, in terms of, kind of that one cut zone read type of offense that they run in San Francisco, Trey Sermon is just a running back, is a really nice fit for the kind of offense they run. And you know what? I actually think he's going to be a decent value because I think there's a chance that he, pardon the pun, runs away with his job. That you have, you know what I mean? Like, I don't think you need.
I think
12 to 15 touches in a 49ers backfield. Like, I think you can be fantasy productive.
But I don't think when you say run away with the job, that's just not the kind of system that they run. Like, I feel like they're a tailback rotation system. And I can see Trey, I agree with you. Like, I think he will have some fantasy value. Like, if you're looking for somebody that other people are going to avoid that could be useful, especially as the season progresses, I think he's it. But I would not ignore Jeff Wilson's value, prove that he could be a touchdown maker when they got in close.
He was tremendous down the stretch last year. Well, anything else? Last thought, Matthew, because it seems like we could have a whole offseason to figure out how this crowded backfield will shake out.
Yeah, no, it's tough. I will say that when you think about how much Deebo Samuel and Brandon Ayuk touch the ball behind the line of scrimmage as well, and the kind of designed runs they make for those guys as well, like, They're going to run the ball. It's going to be a really good offensive line in San Francisco. They're going to do well. And look, Trey Sermon may not be a guy you start every week, but there'll be a few times where you know that this is going to be a Trey Sermon week. And I don't know. I understand what Stefania is saying. Obviously it's going to be a committee situation, but the idea that none of them will have value, I disagree with. I think there will be a player or two that emerges from that backfield that has maybe not RB1, not even RB2, but useful fantasy production week in, week out.
The last rookie that we'll get to here is the Jets' fourth round running back, Michael Carter. Incidentally, they actually drafted two players named Michael Carter in the draft. One plays defensive back, one plays running back. Michael Carter, the second North Carolina running back drafted in this year's class. And he's different than Javonte Williams in a lot of ways, Matthew, but this guy is a problem in the passing game. Is there some value here potentially for Michael Carter?
There's a lot of value here. This is about as good a landing spot as a running back could have landed in. Again, there's issues with the offensive line with the Jets that we talked about, though. Although, look, they
trending, you know, in the right direction.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I mean, listen, you know, they got Becton last year. They draft ABT this week. So this year, I mean, so they're trying to improve that offensive line. Then you think about competition, right? So Tevin Coleman, they signed in the offseason. They've got LaMichael Perrine, the fourth rounder from last year, but not a lot of competition for Michael Carter. So there's a real path to significant playing time for Carter on an offense that we feel, if Zach Wilson's any good at all, is going to be usable. Like, it's, listen, is it going to be a great offense? It isn't, of course not. But, you know, Corey Davis, Denzel Mims, whether it's Crowder or Moore, like, they got some weapons on offense now. And I think this is going to be a functional offense. And so if you're the lead running back of a functional offense, which I think Michael Carter is going to be, you're going to have fantasy value. So this is about as good a landing spot as any running back could have had. So Michael Carter, a lot more fantasy value after the draft than I think people thought he was going to have going into it.
Yeah, potentially. There is potentially some value for one of these Jets running backs, and even more so. Like, I thought they could be a reasonable team to address the running back spot at the top of the second round with his teammate Javonte Williams. The fact that they didn't, obviously the Michael Perrine and also Tevin Coleman, they're in place, but could be some potential value there for Michael Carter, especially if you think this team could struggle in the passing game, could be his role to fantasy success sooner rather than later. Daniel, help me out here. We believe we'll be back at some point, maybe later on this week. Is that correct before I speak out of turn?
Yeah, we're TBD for the rest of this week. We've got a big week next week planned for something fun that I've been planning for a little while. But right now we're TBD, but I was really glad. I just wanted us to be able to get through all of these rookies. And then if anybody else, you know, if there's any other rookies that we haven't mentioned as a part of it, I'd love to open up for a few quick minutes here at the end for Matthew or you or Stefania to jump in.
I'll mention one, and you guys are going to call me a homer. Feel correct on the pronunciation, but is it Dyami Brown?
Dyami Brown, yeah. He's fast as heck, yeah.
Fast as heck, wide receiver out of North Carolina, drafted in the third round by my Washington football team. Here's the thing that Washington has wanted to do in the offseason and in the draft this year. If you look at sort of who they drafted, speed, 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 speed. And then you think about, okay, so they signed Curtis Samuel. They have Terry McLaurin, who's a star. By the way, Terry McLaurin, another third-round wide receiver, drafted at Ohio State 2 years ago. And now they get Dyami Brown, who is, you know, really dynamic. And they paired him with Ryan Fitzpatrick. Ryan Fitzpatrick is a kind of perfect quarterback for a player like Brown in terms of not scared to chuck it deep, not scared to throw into tight windows. And so I think Brown – I think people were surprised that Brown fell. Some people had him ranked a lot higher coming to the draft. And look, you've got guys like Curtis Samuel there and Logan Thomas along with McLaurin. So target share may be tough to come by initially, but I know they want to use Curtis Samuel's versatility quite a bit. So it wouldn't, I think Brown immediately slots in among, you know, kind of in three wide receiver sets for Washington. And I think they'll use that a lot more this year than they did last season. Brown just is sort of interesting, deep league guy, dynasty guy, and certainly, most importantly, I think raises stock of Ryan Fitzpatrick. I think Ryan Fitzpatrick is going to be a really good fantasy quarterback, and no one's talking about him. So as we're sort of in best ball season, you know, I think Fitzy is going to go way late in drafts and put up numbers in a better than they get credit for Washington offense this year.
Stefania, your thoughts?
Yeah, Daniel, I hope you're listening, because I just want to say, I thought the Lions had a great draft. And I'm a big fan of the wide receiver they drafted in the fourth round, 112th overall pick, Amon-Ra St. Brown. I don't know if I'm pronouncing it totally correctly, but
that's correct. Yep.
Obviously, Kenny Golladay is gone. Marvin Jones is gone. You've got Jared Goff needs people to throw to. And this guy is not only a great route runner, he's a great, he can make the difficult catches. So if Jared Goff isn't totally accurate, maybe he helps him out. I also love the fact that he's really smart. He speaks like three languages. And, you know, I think he's going to be a really nice addition for the Lions. And I think they got great value here getting him in the fourth round.
He is the younger brother of Equanimeous St. Brown, by the way, of the Packers. And his father was Mr. Universe. Yeah, their father. Yeah, absolute. He is yoked. That might be, Daniel, let's be honest. The Lions might have drafted Amon-Ra so they can get his dad in there for a couple of OTAs to show the guys how to put some muscle.
We need to get a strength and conditioning coach, bring him in and have the whole team get jacked like he is. I'm with Stefania, though, on this one. Like, I think Amon-Ra St. Brown is going to be good value toward later on in the draft, because a lot of people aren't going to want to have the Lions. Like, it's not an offense you want to invest in fantasy, right? But the idea of a Cooper Kupp kind of a guy potentially for Jared Goff, someone that plays in the middle as a big physical slot receiver, I just think there's a lot of late round upside value there for someone. It's not going to cost you a lot for your investment. So yeah, I'm with you, Stefania.
The intriguing guy, that much is for sure. And, you know, as Stefania mentioned, you guys doubled down on, like, someone's going to have to play wide receiver for the Lions this upcoming season. A couple of names, or I guess one name, Kenneth Gainwell, running back from Memphis. This is the third straight year that a Memphis running back has been selected. 2 years ago, Darrell Henderson last year was Antonio Gibson, who became a running back, played a lot of wide receiver, obviously, during his Clemson time. And then Kenneth Gainwell, who goes in the fifth round to the Eagles, super fun and shifty guy. I know the Eagles have a relatively crowded backfield with some names that you know, like Boston Scott and, of course, Miles Sanders at the top. But at the same time, we also know that Miles Sanders dealt with a couple of dings and bruises this past year in Philly, and like most offensive staffs are going to be probably interested in multiple backs. There's some comparisons being drawn already between Nyheim Hines and Kenneth Gainwell. Nyheim Hines, of course, played for New Eagles head coach Nick Sirianni. All right, so let's keep an eye on some of these late-round players.
One more player, because I'm really curious. I want Field's opinion on this, because I think this was really interesting. The Packers drafting Amari Rodgers out of Clemson in the third round with the 8th pick. Like, why? They traded up 7 spots to get him. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And he still went a little later than some people expected him to, but we obviously don't know what the plan is in Green Bay as far as who's going to be throwing the ball. So what do you make of Amari Rodgers?
Yeah, I really like Amari Rodgers. He is the master of yards after the catch. One of Clemson's 2 wide receivers to get drafted. I thought his teammate Cornell Powell landing with the Chiefs in the 5th round was also a really good landing spot for him. Glad you mentioned the trade-up, Stefania, because when you're 7 picks away and you're moving up for a guy, tells you how much you think of that player and how badly you believe you need that player. Amari Rodgers is going to be, Davante Adams is so incredibly good that, like, it's hard to call anybody anywhere close to his stratosphere. But Amari Rodgers could be the instant impact addition to the Packers wide receiver group that they've needed for a couple of seasons now. Big question mark, obviously, is who's throwing him the football, but he's so good after the catch that some of the stuff that you see Davante Adams do with these tear screens or look screens, you could see Amari Rodgers do opposite him or alongside him. I like to pick a lot. Very interesting player, that much is for sure.
My dynasty team is
hoping they might not have one Rodgers, but they got another.
One A Rodgers to another A Rodgers. All right, so we're going to come back later on this week at some point, date TBD, or next week. We'll see you at some point soon. Lots to get into, because while the draft is over, it kind of feels like the reset of the upcoming fantasy year is just beginning for Matthew and Daniel and Stefania and everybody else involved with the show today. I am Field. We'll talk to you soon.
Peace out.
He's a fantasy guru in a boat on an island, going full Hainsworth without even trying. Award-winning creations like his news or noise segment are reasons we all love the cut of his jib. old shoe in a pile of junk.